Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We would like to greet our new affiliate WMQM AM 1600 in Memphis, Tennessee. That's a 50,000-watt station that's going to be bringing Mark Dankoff's America and the Republic Broadcasting Network to a much wider conventional radio audience in the American South. We also wish to greet our guest today, Nazanin Bonyadi, who was born in Tehran, Iran. Is an Iranian actress now living in Southern California. And there is a very extensive biography of Nazanin that you can find at Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia that discusses, among other things, her role in winning a bachelor's degree with honors in biological sciences from the University of California, Irvine, and her role in conducting molecular research in defining a cure for cancer and heart transplant rejection, which has won her a series of awards. She is an absolutely amazing person that also has a background in music, and among other things, she once received a merit from the Royal College of Music in London for playing the violin. She has an extensive background as an actress, and including a Western television acting career that I trust is still in the process of coming to complete fruition. And perhaps most importantly for purposes of this show, she has a great interest in human rights. And human rights, particularly as it relates to her original home country of Iran. And I would like to introduce Nazanin Bonyadi. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. And, of course, this whole issue of Iran and what is happening in that country as it relates to human rights is something that has been an ongoing concern, I think, both in that country and throughout the rest of the world. What is your present reading of the situation as it relates to human rights in that country?
Well, unfortunately, there are mass human rights violations in Iran at the moment. They have been ongoing for decades, and unfortunately, the people are suffering, and that's really all I care about. As a human rights activist, I care about human rights violations in any country across the world, whether it's, child soldiers in the Congo or the situation in Darfur or even human trafficking right here in the United States. But because I was born in the in Iran, I do have a very deep-rooted affinity for my people, and I care that they that it is an actual democratic country with freedoms and rights that we do have over here in the United States.
Well, you know, I had Mehdi Amini on this show on Friday. And he, of course, is an Iranian now living in the United States, in this case on the East Coast, outside of the Washington, D.C. area. And talking with Mehdi about his group, which is called the United Republicans of Iran, for a secular and democratic republic, he was speaking about his concerns as well on this whole issue of human rights. It seems to me that this is a tightrope situation when it comes to the circumstance in Iran, because of the present rather tense character of the relationship between the United States and Iran and between the West generally and Iran. What do you see as some of the methodologies that can improve the human rights situation in Iran without, at least where the Western countries are concerned, being accused of being involved in the interference in the internal affairs of another country? How does that play out exactly?
Well, as you know, Mark, I'm vehemently against war. I think that war is not the answer. I think that the people of Iran should gain enough knowledge and understanding of human rights to know their rights, their individual rights, so that they can actually speak out against the government. And that is, I think, the only way that Iran will reach democracy. And that's why I'm actively a member of Artists for Human Rights, because that's what we do, is we educate people on human rights with the hopes of, people being able to defend themselves, because you cannot defend what you don't know.
We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America on RBN. Stay tuned.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
People who use Cartivite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartivite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartivite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 2 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822. 8822.
This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our guest today in the last hour of the show is Nazanin Bonjati. You can find out all about her in regard to her biography as it is posted at Wikipedia. Nazanin's first name is spelled N-A-Z-A-N-I-N. That's N-A-Z-A-N-I-N. Last name Bonjati spelled B-O-N-I-A-D-I. That's B-O-N-I-A-D-I. IADI, pronounced Nazanin Bonjati, born in Tehran, Iran. She is an Iranian actress, and Wikipedia will give you the lowdown on the various places where her work has appeared. She was born in Tehran, subsequently moved to London, earned a bachelor's degree with honors in biological sciences from the University of California, Irvine, and also has an incredible musical background. Where, among other things, she received a merit from the Royal College of Music in London at the age of 10 for playing the violin. We won't discuss what I was doing at the age of 10, which largely involved hitting a baseball and doing little else. So I'm rather humiliated to read all these incredible accomplishments of someone else by the time they reached the age of 10. But suffice it to say that we're talking today about human rights and the whole issue of human rights as it relates specifically to the country of Iran. And Nazanin, it seems to me that, we are looking at a very, very difficult situation because on the one hand, I'm satisfied from talking with a variety of sources that I trust, of whom you are one, that there is a very serious series of human rights issues as they relate to your original home country. And, of course, that's something that it seems to me to be historically fair, predates the present Islamic regime in Iran. There were some real issues, of course, that have been raised from time to time in regard to what was going on under the Shah's regime from 1953 to 1979.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we're now dealing with the excesses of the Mullah's regime, as those have been chronicled by a series of organizations. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch come to mind as just two. How should we think of the present situation over there in terms of a strategy that, in the longer historical sense of the term, will produce positive results for the Iranian people in terms of the reform of their political institutions and the restoration of their freedoms without engaging, at least from a Western perspective, in an interventionist policy with Iran that quite rightly would leave America and Britain and some other nations open to the charge of meddling in the internal affairs of that country? How does all this play out?
Well, I believe knowledge is power, and I'll give you an example of how I think one person can make a difference. You know, in the early 60s in the Deep South, there was a young African-American boy who was sitting in his one-room shabby schoolhouse flipping through a third-hand civic textbook, and he came across the Bill of Rights, and he read the rights. Luckily, this young boy was literate, and he read the Bill of Rights. He looked around him, looked at his world, and he realized that it didn't quite make sense, and he didn't have those rights. That young boy was Martin Luther King Jr., and he decided to do something about it. And that shows you the power of knowledge, education, literacy, and having those knowing your rights, really, so that you can do something about it. My whole goal is to educate enough Iranians so that they can do something about their own plight, their own situation, in their own homeland. I don't think it requires the intervention of any other country outside of Iran. I think that could create more of a problem in the future. But unfortunately, I don't think enough Iranians know their own rights. And that's what I plan to do, is educate them through Artists for Human Rights.
The whole issue, then, of the situation in Iran, you would then underscore the importance, presumably, of literacy and education. What role does Internet technology play in all of this? Are we looking at a situation where, ostensibly, as you have a literate society and as you have a society that hopefully will have at least some accessibility to the Internet, where people in that country will be encountering ideas and literatures that they have not been exposed to before, political ideas that presumably would be new to them, that would cause them to reassess their own situations in their own homeland? Is that a part of this?
Absolutely. Without a doubt, the Internet is playing a huge role. Blogs and information websites where people are actually receiving information from outside of Iran, which is really the source of education, because censorship is such an issue within Iran. Unfortunately, though, the Internet is only available as is cable television or satellite television in Iran to the elite or people who have money. And unfortunately, that tends to be people who are tied in with the government somehow. So the people who really want to see change are oftentimes, they don't have access to the Internet or satellite, and they're not getting the information that would cause them to get up and do something about it.
Well, yes, and to me this is even an issue in what we think of as the so-called developed countries, whatever that phrase is supposed to mean. I look, for example, at the United States, and of course these are my opinions, not yours at this point, certainly, but I look at corporate media in the United States, where you have five or six media consortiums that presumably own most of the major print and electronic organs of opinion in this country, and where there tends to be a defined level of political conversation that I argue is more controlled than it was a couple of generations ago, when independent media, both print and electronic, was a more marketable commodity in this country, I would say 50 years ago, than it certainly is now. I have a lot of concerns about that trend in the United States as it comes to unofficial forms of political censorship, certain establishment definitions of what is politically correct and incorrect in regard to conversations and analysis of ideas, and certainly the notion in a post 9/11 era. I think that there's been a move in the United States potentially toward a more dangerous regulation of ideas and freedom of expression.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that this is an ongoing tension, not simply in the developing world, but in the developed world, and that war has a tendency to result, a very strong tendency to result, in the restriction of the dissemination of information all the way around on the part of central governments. Is this, without getting too deeply into this, because I know that that's not the purpose of your appearance today, would this not be a very dangerous side effect of a conflict between Iran and the West, and that potentially you could see a lot of imposed censorship on both sides and a restriction of the free flow of information on both sides in the aisle in this thing?
Yeah, what we as American residents or citizens have to be aware of is not being gullible and not buying into everything, every piece of information that comes our way. The media in the United States is very good at feeding us things that are not necessarily the whole picture. And we're not witnessing things firsthand. We're just buying into this information that is fed to us on a daily basis. And you're right, there is a high level of censorship, and the information that is given to us serves a purpose. And that is the agenda of the media, the multi-million-dollar media companies who, you know, have agendas of their own, whether it's political or otherwise or financial. And we do have to be aware of that, because it's our responsibility to know why we're going to war, as was the case with Iraq. And I don't want the same mistakes to happen with Iran. I mean, the people in Iran need our support and help, and that's the point is to free the people, to liberate the people. And if that's the case, then war is really not the answer, and we have to be very aware of this information fed to us.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any question that, as was once observed by a very famous American libertarian, war is the health. War provides the health of the central state. And to the extent that you have a situation where a nation is ongoingly involved in foreign wars without a lot of justification for those wars, that tends to be the same country or the same government, I should say, that leans toward more oppressive tendencies at home, and arguably the United States is struggling, with that whole issue right now. In regard to Iran, when I lived in Iran many years ago when my parents were stationed there, we're now going back to the 1970s when my father was working for the Shah's Air Force as a representative of the Lockheed Company. I was in college outside of Chicago in those days and just going over to Tehran for a series of summers and Christmas seasons, dating over a period of time, I think, of about 5 years. In those days, Iran had far less of a population than it has today. I was amazed to discover, for example, that the Tehran I remember had approximately 4 million people in it, I'm told, in the early 1970s. There are about 15 million people living there now. I understand that there are at least 70, if not 75 million people living in the total country of Iran, and that approximately half of those are under the age of 30. With a population that youthful and a population that really has no historical memory of the events that transpired in Iran between 1953 and, say, 1979, there's no historical memory of the monarchy, no historical memory of the role that the United States and Russia and Britain played in Iran during the period of time, both during and after the Second World War. We're operating with something of a cleaned historical memory slate, potentially here. Is this an opportunity for there to be a new day in regard to the relationship between the United States and Britain on the one hand and Iran on the other? And do we see, with this population that is under 30 in Iran, some evidence that they are beginning to chafe under the leadership of the present regime? We'll explore that when we come back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
How are you preparing ahead for the events in the future? In the near future, we know there will be those of us that will not be able to buy or sell. Stoves & More wants to help give you the freedom from the systems of the world and from skyrocketing fuel prices. Stoves & More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you an independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. These state-of-the-art cook stoves are nothing like Grandma's old stoves. They have large, airtight, efficient fireboxes that give you an all-night burn, easily heat up to 2,000 square feet. Whether or not you're off the grid, we have products for you from stoves to Staber washers and 12 and 24 volt refrigeration. At Stoves & More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. To the first 10 people who purchase a stove, we'll send a free copy of our newly released DVD, Getting Started with Wood Cook Stoves. Stoves & More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at www.stovesandmoreonline.com. That website again, stovesandmoreonline.com.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow. I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017. Or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Nazanin Bonyadi. She is a Persian actress, Iranian human rights activist, and is based at present in Southern California. You can find out more about her through Wikipedia by looking up Nazanin Bonyadi and reading all of the information that's there. And there are some links there that will take you to other sites. We've been talking a little bit about this whole issue of human rights generally, and the question of human rights specifically as it relates to Iran. Nazanin, I was just saying before the break that you presently have in that country something like 70 to 75 million people. You have presumably a lot of folks under the age of 30 in that country, over 50%, I'm told, who do not remember the monarchical days in Iran and all of the things that were involved in that situation one way or the other. They seem to be somewhat chafing under the leadership of the present theocratic government. I remember reading about the student riots in the summer of 1999 that involved a lot of tension on some of Iran's college campuses at that point, including the University of Tehran. Is this an indication that for those Iranians who are under the age of 30, that they're not particularly happy, apparently, with the economy of the country. They're not particularly happy with what many of them see, at least the educated, college-educated elite sees, as a lack of political and cultural freedoms in Iran. How does that translate into effective political change in a situation where, at least up to now, as I understand it, with the Islamic Constitution, between the Supreme Leader and the Guardians Council and the Expediency Council and the Assembly of Experts and the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, there doesn't seem to be a lot of room and a lot of toleration for wider political and cultural expression of the type that you would like to see there. Is something going to come to a head at some point in regard to this?
I sure hope so. I mean, here is a country, my sources tell me actually the vast majority, something like 70% of the country are under the age of 30.
Okay.
That is a huge number. And those people are, you're right, they didn't see the time of the Shah. And yes, there were human rights violations at that time too. However, there were also many freedoms that currently are not in that country and are not in place in that country. And for example, women could vote. They currently have very few, if any, rights. They're third-class citizens. They also have the value of a woman is also half that of a man. So, I mean, there are so many just core problems with the country. And unfortunately, 70% of the country have nothing to compare the situation to. So they've probably never been outside of Iran. There is a great deal of poverty, illiteracy. And so, yes, we have a great student movement, and they are, in fact, doing something about it, but they're a minority. And also, with recent problems with the government imposed upon them, such as the three-strike rule, where if you are caught three times speaking in any form against the government, you will be expelled from university. I mean, that just goes to show that somebody who is has problems or has issues with the current administration cannot or is not entitled to a higher education, and so cannot lead the country out of the problem in any way because they won't have a degree of any kind. So it's a very deep-rooted problem. Yes, 70% of the country is very young and against the government, but they're very limited in what they can do. So that's why they need our support from outside the country. If only just emotional support, the fact that they know that we have their back, so to speak. We're here for them, and we support them in their movement.
Well, you know, there's a great paradox going on here, it seems to me. And again, without getting too deeply into this, because it would open up all kinds of things in regard to Pandora's box with our conversation today. But I see, on the one hand, of course, admittedly, I have not been in Iran in 30 years. But as I look at what is transpiring there now, as near as I can tell it, from talking with sources who have been there in recent times and from reading all kinds of international publications in English on the World Wide Web, discuss these topics across the political spectrum, it seems to me that there is definitely a reservoir of discontent with the present government. Again, citing your figure of 70% of a country of 70 million people being under the age of 30, there are all kinds of ramifications of that, I think, culturally, politically, economically, and in terms of the future of any budding, burgeoning human rights movement. So we have something in place here that conceivably in the longer run might bear some degree of fruit in a political transition being made in that nation. And yet, by the same token, it seems that at least some of those who believe that Iran is a repressive society and who are calling for regime change in that country, at least in some cases, seem to be backers of the notion that there should be the replacement of that country's government through military force. In my view, that would be counterproductive and would produce an incredible backlash. I just wanted to get your take on that when we come back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned for Nazanin Bonyadi when we return.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, a few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartavite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Nazanin Bonyadi. She is a Persian actress, born in Tehran, Iran, British educated, now living in Southern California. You can find her biography at Wikipedia by simply searching for Nazanin Bonyadi through the Google search engine. First name is spelled N-A-Z-A-N-I-N. Last name spelled B-O-N-I-A-D-I, Bonyadi. And Nazanin, talking about where we were before the break, you have a situation, of course, where there's a lot of talk internationally about the danger of a confrontation between the United States and Britain on the one hand and Iran on the other. I'm editorializing here, but I personally believe that would be a tragedy if that were to happen. I don't think that that war is in the interest of any of the countries involved, the true interests. I'm editorializing by saying that I am concerned that the same forces that I've been saying on this show were pushing the United States into a conflict with Iraq I'm thinking of the Israeli lobby, thinking of the American oil and natural gas consortiums, and those who just generally believed that the United States should be involved in every foreign conflict around the world, whether there's an interest there or not, seem to have gotten us into something in the Middle East that's a very, very difficult circumstance. If there is a war with Iran, the interests that I think were promoting war with Iraq proved to be successful in promoting war with Iran, can we not pretty much guarantee that across the political spectrum that there would be not only a backlash against the United States on this, it seems to me, but that there would be a reservoir of support for the IRI regime in Tehran that it doesn't presently have, simply because there would be an understandable wave of sympathy coming from Iranians across the political spectrum against an attack that they would quite rightly believe would be the wrong thing morally, the wrong thing politically.
Yes, I believe a war would be an absolute catastrophe because there are millions of people in Iran who are currently on the fence as far as are they against the IRI or are they pro the United States or, you know, they haven't really decided their positioning. All they know is that they're not living happy, fulfilling lives because of poverty, illiteracy, lack of democracy, et cetera. And those people are really going to be, you know, isolated and turned against the United States and will start siding with the IRI if something should be instigated by the United States as far as a war goes. My whole problem with war is that it takes away unity and it really creates, you know, lack of unity. And then my whole point with educating people for human rights on human rights issues is to create unity and to bring people together. The biggest problem Iran has is there are so many factions of beliefs as to how it should be salvaged at this point, that really there is no unity, so war is not the answer.
Well, yes, and you've identified what was going to be a follow-up question on my part. One of the, as I observe this as a non-Iranian, non-Persian, as I watch this as an interested Western observer who is empathetic with the Iranian people, and I would like to see them have the kind of independence and autonomy that has in many respects, largely been stripped away from them by a series of foreign powers over a period of many, many decades and centuries, thinking just in the 20th century about Russia and Britain and the United States and Israel and some of the tragic things that have happened to the Iranian people in the wake of that sort of a political maelstrom. I'd nonetheless look at the Iranian political spectrum, as I understand it, in regard simply to those either in Iran or outside of Iran, who are not thought to be hospitable to the Islamic regime. It seems to me that there is such a diverse element outside of the of those Iranians that support the Islamic regime that trying to find unity among the anti-Islamic theocratic regime Iranians seems somewhat elusive. I mean, I read these things that, are put out by various people in the Iranian political spectrum, all of whom are agreed that the Islamic regime is not in the interest of the Iranian nation or the Iranian people, and they cite economic factors, human rights factors, cultural factors, so forth and so on. And yet, by the same token, there is such tremendous disagreement among those folks. I mean, I read things put out by Iranians who seem to be coming from a Marxist orientation. I'm reading things coming from Iranians like Mehdi Amini of this United Republicans of Iran for a Secular and Democratic Republic, who seems to be arguing for some version of a secular nationalistic form of Iranian political expression that maybe in some respects dates back to the old National Front movement. And then, of course, you have the monarchists, those who think that there should be some type of a return to the 2,500-year-old Persian monarchy as a part of a package of political reform in that country. That's a pretty diverse group of people from left to right, it seems to me.
Yeah.
And how that group coalesces in terms of a unified political front vis-a-vis the Islamic regime is a little elusive to me. Is that your frustration with this too?
Absolutely. There is no agreement whatsoever on how Iran is to be salvaged at this point. You have the people from the IRI, you have communists, you have monarchists, and then, of course, you have the Republicans. And these four groups are the main groups, and they just don't get along. And that is my problem, is we want core people from all of these groups to come together and form some kind of alliance and say, you know, let's put aside our political differences and for now just concentrate on the fact that a change, a major change, a revolution, in fact, needs to happen in Iran. So that so many points of the UN Declaration of Human Rights are not violated, whether it's we are all free and equal, or unfair detainment, or the right to life, the right to an education, all of these points are violated at this time. That should be our main focus. It doesn't matter if you're a communist or a Republican or a monarchist or, in fact, somebody who's working for the IRI currently. I have no qualms with people, government officials who are currently working in the IRI to step forward. I think that would take great courage for them to step forward and say, look, let's all work together and create democracy in this country. That's what's needed.
Well, you know, you make an interesting point there, Nazanin, because as I simply read the international media, I try to get outside this country to the extent that I can in regard to the Internet and read as many English language things as I can coming from abroad across the political spectrum. It seems to me that one thing that has emerged as a theme in recent times is that when we look at the Islamic regime in Tehran.
Hello?
It is pretty much monolithic in its perspective, and yet I see evidence that the supreme leader, Khamenei, and certainly people like Rafsanjani may have some concerns and differences of opinion with President Ahmadinejad. And that potentially, if there's any grain of truth, opinion that seemed to be emerging from within that regime could be skillfully exploited for positive purposes by the West in regard to opening up some degree of conversation and negotiation with elements of that regime that might not be as hardline as we have been led to believe that they are. Is that your feeling about this?
Well, one thing that I don't want people to be fooled by is the fact that this administration or this regime in its current form can produce any kind of democracy. I mean, the fact of the matter is negotiations have not worked for 27 years or 28 years, and they're unlikely to right now. I think, though, that there are individuals in the current government who are very unhappy with the current situation. They may not be able to speak out for fear of being imprisoned or punished. In my opinion, those people are the key terminals who have to come forward and say, enough is enough. Let's all, group together all the people who are against the current administration and really work together for secular democracy. That's my stance on it. Outside influence, as far as the United States comes or goes, or the United Kingdom, I think that the only help that they can give is to support individuals like that. I don't think negotiating with the current administration is going to be very fruitful.
Yeah, and I think that that's a very good and very helpful distinction that that should be made here. I follow that, and I think it's an excellent suggestion. In regard, then, to the present circumstance, if we are dealing with a situation where, at least for the longer term, the best hope for an internally generated political movement toward constructive change in Iran is going to be based in education and increased literacy and ongoing exposure to a variety of different ideas coming to that country from abroad, presumably through the medium of the Internet, how do we facilitate that happening? I think that the idea makes perfect sense to me. Practically speaking, how do we begin to see over time some movement toward those goals, literacy, for example, education and information exchange. How do we get from point A to point B with this?
Sure. Well, the main thing is, as Americans, we have to create some kind of dialogue with the youth movement in Iran at the moment. As we talked about 70% of the country is currently under the age of 30. A lot of these people are students, many are not, but a lot of them have access to the internet. And if we go online as, you know, as Americans or as any other people living in any other Western country, and if we just go online and go to blogs where these Iranian youths are talking and they're speaking their minds and asking for our help, and we give them the truth, and the truth is that there is a UN Declaration on Human Rights. In the United States, we have a Bill of Rights, and they can make the distinction. They can compare their situation to an ideal situation. I'm not saying that an American situation is completely ideal, but we have the basis of something which could be ideal, and those things are the Bill of Rights and, of course, the UN Declaration of Human Rights, which is what I work on day in, day out to educate people on, and so that they can help themselves. And as the Middle East ambassador for Artists for Human Rights, that's what I want, is for people to go online and educate people on the UN Declaration of Human Rights. And many Americans don't even know their rights. And that's what I think the problem is. How can we help another country when we have violations in our own country or a lack of knowledge in our own country of those rights?
Well, Lynn, to be frank with you, there are many of us on the American right, including me, who have our own set of problems with the United Nations, which, of course, would open up a completely different topic for a different show. But that's something that, of course, I'd have to throw into the mix, too, in terms of my own concerns. But in regard to this situation that we presently face, I wanted to ask you something that I hope doesn't make you feel uncomfortable on the air, but it has occurred to me from time to time, because I know a number of Persian Americans in this country through my own past in Iran. If there should be a tragedy that does involve a war between this country and Iran, and I hope and pray that that doesn't happen for all kinds of good reasons, if it should happen, and I'm going back, of course, to a time that predates my own lifetime, when in my parents' generation, when there was a war that occurred between this country and Germany and Japan, that to some extent there was a little backlash against German Americans in the United States. There's some documentation on this that exists through the Donk organization up in Chicago. There was clearly far more discrimination that was practiced against Japanese Americans at the behest of the Roosevelt administration. Is there a concern among Iranian Americans that if there is a war between this country and Iran, that many Iranian Americans could find themselves being unfairly singled out, formally or informally, in the same sort of way that, say, Japanese Americans were at the onset of World War II? Are you hearing anything along those lines?
I personally, perhaps it's because of the location geographically of where I live in the United States, but I haven't been witness to any kind of discrimination against the Iranians. I think that, you know, even after the events of 9/11 or you know, there was the hostage crisis recently, and I just believe that as Iranians we have a responsibility to educate people who are unaware or ignorant, perhaps, of, you know, who we are. The truth of the matter is that human rights originated in Iran over 2,500 years ago. It was the first country who had human rights. And we are a peaceful people. We're a peace-loving people who, actually, in the United States, are one of the most affluent minority groups and the most successful, even though we've only really been here for the past 30 years or so. So really, we're no threat to the U.S. We're just living our lives, and I don't really see or predict that there would be any kind of major conflict for people who Iranians who are living in the United States. However, unfortunately, there are always situations where people come under attack because of just sheer ignorance. And unfortunately, that's unavoidable, especially at a time of war. But I think really it comes down to educating people around you of who we really are.
Well, let me ask you another question, turning this around just for a minute, Nazanin. I am trying to put myself in the mind of the present government in Iran and the people of Iran. And going back, of course, to the period of time in the late 1970s when there was a movement toward what became the Islamic Revolution against the Shah's government and presumably against Western influence in that country. Should we, at some level, be somewhat understanding of at least a few of the facets of this backlash of 1978 and 79? And what I mean by that is, when I look at contemporary American culture, I see a lot of decadence out there, a lot of moral evil, and a lot of things being perpetrated along those lines in a way that certainly offends me as an American of an older Christian perspective. Does not some of this explain the Islamic phenomenon in Iran? I'm going to take that up with you just for a second when we come back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow. I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017. Or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
We're back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined in these final minutes by Nazanin Bonyadi, a Persian actress living in Southern California, born in Tehran, Iran, educated in Britain as well as the United States in both scientific and musical endeavors as well as in the whole art of professional acting. And you can find more about Nazanin Bonyadi by doing a search on her through Google. First name spelled N-A-Z-A-N-I-N, last name Bonyadi, B-O-N-I-A-D-I. And I wanted to mention again that tomorrow Phil Turney will be with us. He is the third person I have had on this show who was a part of the USS Liberty crew that was attacked by Israel on June the 8th, 1967, in a terrible tragedy that continues to be enshrouded in political mystery as Dean Rusk and Admiral Moore and three separate CIA reports insist that Israel engaged in a deliberate, premeditated attack upon this United States intelligence vessel on June the 8th, 1967. I happen to agree with that assessment based upon what I've read and talking with these men. Phil Turney will continue that conversation tomorrow as the top deck damage control officer who had to deal firsthand with the human carnage of that tragedy, where out of 297 crew members on that fateful day, 34, I believe, were killed, 171 were wounded. And again, we're still trying to unpack the larger political implications of what happened in that Israeli attack on that American vessel 40 years ago. I also wanted to mention this American Free Press volume, The CIA in Iran, the 1953 coup and the origins of the U.S.-Iran divide. You can have that through American Free Press for $20, and that's available at 1-888-699-NEWS. That's 1-888-699-NEWS. And Nazanin, this may be a somewhat loaded question, but this book I'm referring to produces some American and British intelligence documents from the 1950s that have now been declassified, pulled out of the George Washington University archives, which indicate that the United States and Iran, the United States and Britain, were very much involved in manipulating events to overthrow a government in 1953 in Iran. A lot of discussion there of press manipulation and false media spins and false flag incidents and so forth and so on. Does this incident, I'm thinking of two things now. One is what happened in 1953 in Iran, where clearly the United States and Britain interfered in the internal affairs of Iran. Does this not linger as one explanation for the present phenomenon of the Islamic Republic of Iran regime in Tehran? And secondarily, when one looks at what many people argue is a very decadent secular consumerist culture in this country and in the West generally, that the Islamic Republic is appealing to many people in Iran who see that sort of a sexually decadent consumerist culture in the West as something that's eating away at the fiber of their nation. What's your take on that as we close?
In a nutshell, I believe that there is no trust by Iranians within Iran of the United States at the moment, precisely for the reasons that you mentioned, the coup in the 1950s. And I think that hurts us because the United States is in a position to really help us get out of this position. Secondly, yes, there is great decadence in this country, and the morals have gone down the drain. Drug use has, skyrocketed, and we really need to look at our own situation, our own responsibility in setting a great example for other countries.
Yes, and I think the ongoing suspicion, frankly, that Jewish elements have been very much involved in the promotion of that culture in America, which creates a further tension between the United States and Iran. By the way, the American Free Press is going to be covering the USS Liberty incident on a weekly basis until the anniversary. Thanks to Nazanin.